You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you're interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support.
You've got the touch. You've got the power of the dog.
Of the dog? Dog.
I was like, how does that song connect to this movie? And then it's like, all right, I see it now.
It's the power, man. The power of the dog in this case.
I think you're thinking of the D-A-W-G spelling, which is a different movie altogether.
Oh, yeah. Nah, there's no Transformers or dogs anywhere around here in this film.
And because it takes place in 1920s Montana, no black people whatsoever except like one guy in a pool scene.
There were two. Yeah, they were in that dinner scene. They were right in the very back of the table. Oh, well, it's, yeah, that's what it is. But this is The Power of the Dog. This is the newest film from Jane Campion, who, Bo and I were talking about this. This is her first feature film that she's directed in 12 years since Bright Star back in 2009, if anyone remembers that movie.
It's been a minute, and I don't think many people do remember that movie, unfortunately.
In between that, though, she did that show Top of the Lake with
Elizabeth Moss, which was an adaptation of a Scandinavian series. Yeah, turned out to be quite good.
Yeah. No, she has a good, like, Jane Campion's style is hard to nail down exactly. It's a very character-driven, very somber, very poetic tone that she creates with stuff like the piano and this film.
I would sum her up as saying she's a very literary filmmaker. Mm-hmm. And that's what this movie felt like to me. It felt like when I'm listening to or reading a good short story or novella, it had a lot of those, you know, similar narrative flows. Mm-hmm. that it's just like, because this movie is heavy in symbolism. It's almost like reminding me of some early 20th century naturalistic stuff.
Oh yeah, the title's a metaphor, some of the characters are metaphors, there's metaphors everywhere. There's so much subtext hidden throughout this movie.
Is there ever a movie, oh never mind, I know the answer to this. I was like, is there ever a movie set in the 1920s that's actually kind of happy? And then I was like, oh yeah, it's Oh Brother Where Art Thou. That's the only one.
Yeah, that's about it.
Yeah.
Well, and even then, like, the stars almost get hanged.
That's true. Well, hey everybody, my name is Justin Zarian. I'm on this review today with Bo.
Yes, I'm here too.
Indeed, and so is Marco.
Ahoy, ahoy.
Hey. So, Bo, if you'd be so kind, what is the synopsis of The Power of the Doge?
It's an American Western, but it's happening at the very tail end of the Western epoch. We're dealing with 1920s Montana, so kind of as the range has shrunk, this is like our little group of people that are still doing cattle drives and stuff like this. And there are two brothers, one of whom is played by Jesse Plemons, the other by Benedict Cumberbatch. They are out on a cattle drive, and at the end of the drive, they stay at an inn where Jesse Plemons meets Kristen Dunst's character and her son. She is an innkeeper. Plemons becomes very smitten with her, much to the obvious unease of Benedict Cumberbatch, who not only isn't crazy about his brother getting married at all, as kind of plays out, but also he is none too fond of her son, who is somewhat of a bookworm. The word effete could be used, even effeminate. Mm-hmm. When we first meet him, he's like literally making paper flowers to use as like, you know, little pieces on the table. And he also puts some out on his recently deceased father's grave. What eventually happens is Plemons' character does indeed become smitten and lets his feelings be known to Kirsten Dunst's character, who is Rose, I believe. Mm-hmm. They get married. Even though, obviously, he has a depth of feeling for her, it's obvious that Plemons' character kind of has an ideal of what a woman should be. They are more or less cattle barons. They have a very large ranch house that is magnificently furnished. And it's kind of out of place because you can kind of see Jesse Plemons like putting on the airs of a gentleman rancher, whereas his brother is still like very much like right off the range, wearing chaps inside the house, which is like, okay, interesting. You know, never wears anything but overalls, is kind of unwashed, you know, always smells like horse. Plemons kind of wants Rose to come in there and maybe gentrify the place so that he can bring their parents. He wants her to kind of bring a shine to this existence of theirs and get away from that very hardcore, like, we're cattlemen and that's what we do element that Cumberbatch exhibits in this. Rose very quickly finds that she's not very comfortable in this, you know, in this place. Her husband is often away, and it is very obvious that Benedict Cumberbatch's character really hates her.
He makes it overt, like, from the get-go.
Yes, and if not hatred, like, intense resentment. Things kind of come to a head when her son, who she sent off to school to study to be a doctor, comes home for the summer break. There's kind of a tug of war between her and Cumberbatch's character. And I can't really say mayhem ensues, but the literary equivalent of, like, subtextual mayhem seriously occurs.
Yeah, that's the thing with this movie is that when we say there's lots of subtext, this is a very subtle movie. It's very quiet.
It is not overt at all.
No, yeah. It's very much where big things happen, only in the sense that it affects people really harshly. But it's not a big moment when they happen. They're all very quiet, very matter-of-fact, almost, in a lot of cases. It's just like, and then this happens, and then this happens, and then this happens, kind of thing like that. But I think that really works to the tone of this movie, because it is a movie that's really about introspection, identity. As you mentioned earlier, Bo, it's very much a treatise on what it means to be masculine, or what it means to be a man in so many different facets of manhood.
I think the major, like, points of this movie are masculinity and loneliness.
Yes, very lonely.
And, you know, how you be a man and how you be alone, whether you are a man or a woman. So the exploration of this movie, because it is almost an intellectual exercise, relies more on what the actors are not giving us overtly and more on what their experience inside. And you really couldn't have picked a better cast for that, because I really think especially Dunst and Cumberbatch are giving incredible performances here, as well as Cody Smith McPhee.
Yeah, if you're a character in this story, you're pretty much alone throughout the entire thing with, I mean, all your ambitions and all your goals. I think the only one that's not is the son gets taken over under someone's wing.
But even then, it's only after he gets, like, mercilessly ostracized by people for a good chunk of the movie.
Yeah, I mean, for it being a major plot point, it doesn't happen until the second half, roughly.
Yeah.
I mean, they really bring that in, and it happens very organically. There is a, you know, particularly big inciting incident that you know, where you get a turnaround where Cumberbatch's character goes to Peter and is like, okay, we got off to the wrong foot. Let's try to reconcile a bit. And, you know, because of the situation you're in, you're like, well, what are his motives there? But it happens very organically. Mm-hmm. And as he gets to know Peter, what we see is that his ideal of him, even though outwardly he is a very, you know, kind of effeminate face. I mean, he's walking around a cattle ranch wearing, like, tennis shoes in the 1920s. That's, you know.
And he's, like, skinny as a beanpole, pretty much.
Yeah, he's skinny as a beanpole. His jeans don't fit him. He can barely ride a horse. And Cumberbatch really, like, starts to engage him, he's like, oh, maybe this kid is not what I cracked him up to be at all.
Yeah. But, you know, that's one of the things I really love about this movie. Bo, as you mentioned, this cast is phenomenal. And not only in terms of just the acting of these characters, but how they really get the motives of these characters. And yet, at the same time, their motives are kind of inscrutable at points. Like, you understand what they're doing, but it's sometimes not clear, is this a genuine thing they're doing? Is this to get back at somebody? Is there an ulterior motive with this? There's an ambiguity with how characters relate to each other that I think, you know, in someone else's hands, it would prove maybe frustrating. But here, you feel like you really get into these people's heads. And it's partly because of how well Campion directs this film and how well the actors get inhabit these people. Like, honestly, this is probably some of the best work Benedict Cumberbatch has ever done. And it's not even so much like big, showy acting stuff, but it's very, very small, very reserved, very, very nasty. And it's stuff that you haven't seen Benedict Cumberbatch do in a lot of movies.
Well, and his casting is incredible. Paul Dano was supposed to play his brother, but it ends up being played by Jesse Plemons, who is, if you look at the two of them, the much more masculine of the two. I mean, you generally don't think of like Benedict Cumberbatch as a cowboy type, but he really fully inhabits the character, and I think that really works to the film's advantage because it shows you, like, hey, you can be tall, skinny, and still, like, you know, have this whole ranch of cowboys look up to you as, like, you're the gold standard.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so when he does take Peter under his wing, it really becomes a, like, oh, well, you know, how's this going to work out?
That might be the only thing where I kind of disagree a little bit. So Benedict is a very good cowboy, but I thought that was a hint of realism in it. Anytime you see a photo of old cowboys, it's like they're all skinny as shit, and yeah. Whenever they do interviews, it was like, I'm 15.
Sure.
All rugged and sunburnt and leather face. I'm like, that, I mean, the only thing that probably isn't realism, like, the casting was great, but I was like, they're having too much fun. They're bathing too much or maybe that's just the way the movie played out.
I don't know. Benedict Cumberbatch is, like, covered in crap and dirt and mud throughout, like, 80% of this movie, it feels like.
Yeah, because he's in the plot. But if you're not in the plot, everyone else was really happy. Literally, though, there's an opening scene where they're at a party and Benedict is like, shut the fuck up, everyone be miserable like me.
But I think that's the point of the story. And I think that's a thing that I really like, because normally Jane Campion films can be kind of dour and kind of bleak in their tone. And I've heard people complain that this movie is fairly bleak, especially stuff that happens at the end that I don't even want to hint at, that really changes the way the plot goes. But it's nice to have the counterpoint to Benedict Cumberbatch's character. Because if it was just about him, I wouldn't have tolerated this movie as much as I did. But you have the extremes of Jesse Plemons, who is honestly the most wholly good person in this story. Like, he's the guy who, I mean, he's Jesse Plemons. He's big, doughy, and lovable. You want to just hug him, kind of thing. And that's pretty much what he's playing in this movie. And it works as a great anchor to the other stuff that's going on in the plot, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Campion has a, like I said, she has a very literary grasp of narrative, and so she can kind of let these characters play out without doing anything like, I have to do this obvious thing to establish the character. I think the characters do a really good job of establishing themselves in just, like, you know, being themselves. You're not getting a John Ford cowboy here.
No.
At all. But there's no doubt in your mind, like, you know, even barely into the movie, that it's like, oh, Benedict Cumberbatch, he's very good at what he does. You know, he's very much a man of the land. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes the revelations that we find afterwards so much more poignant. You know, the same thing with, like, all the characters in here. They are still, but they're also very dynamic.
Indeed.
And I think that's just the like, Campion does such a great job of structuring this, that she lets them exist in their own world. But we see the change play out very elegantly.
Indeed. Now, and I think this movie is just so well made, on top of the great writing and the great acting, that it's shot gorgeously. It's got great kind of, it almost reminds me of Nomadland cinematography style, where it's a very dimly lit and yet very colorful and lush look to it at the same time. It's got immaculate costume design for just about everybody in this movie. They all have just such distinct outfits that say so much about their characters. It's got great editing, it's got great pacing, the music is phenomenal in this movie. Johnny Greenwood, just this and Spencer, just a big 1-2 punch for his musical talents this year.
Yeah, and I also think that the setting, I believe it was filmed in Bulgaria, but you would not hesitate to believe that you're in Montana. Like, there's just these amazing mountain ranges and this use of space that, even though they're living in what is essentially a mansion, they still have moments where it's just like, no, you're a very small person in this, like, very huge and unpopulated landscape, and it really, like, serves to highlight everybody's loneliness.
So actually, it was filmed in New Zealand, and that's the only critique I have with the setting, is that having seen Montana,
yeah,
and then seeing some of the location shots you see in this movie, it's like, oh, those mountains are from Lord of the Rings. You can tell that there's some of these places, like, there ain't nowhere in Montana that looks like that. But yeah, no, I totally agree that there's just some great set work otherwise with that. It's just so gorgeous. I am struggling to think of things I didn't like in this movie. because, you know, and I don't want to just bandy that lightly, but I honestly think that of the dramatic fare that we've had this year, not just the light and fun stuff like Belfast or Tick, Tick, Boom, which I just had so much fun with, this is one of the better dramatic outings I've seen in a while for 2021. I don't know, like, is there anything in particular you guys felt didn't work terribly well in this movie?
I mean, I would struggle to find something. I think it's, if nothing else, and certainly this is not the movie that's going to be everybody's cup of tea, but it's to me, it's one of the most elegant movies of this year by a long, long stretch. And yeah, it's just, it's a very finely crafted, and it's obvious that, you know, Jane Campion's kind of time away has served her well, because certainly I've enjoyed her stuff before, but this is really, like, you know, almost up to, like, a Kurosawa standard of like, you really are helming this well.
That's actually a very good comparison. It's like, it's either Kurosawa or Ozu, I feel. But yeah, kind of that Japanese, like, you know, very naturalistic, artistic approach, like you would say. Marco, any other points that you would say about that, though?
There's nothing to say that wouldn't spoil the movie, because this is so slice of life, in a way, slice of Montana life in the 1920s. Just sign up for the trip, man. Everything is, like you guys said, subtextual. Like, there's not a lot of overt action. Maybe you, if you want to say, like, if you want to say that as a criticism, but that's not what it's about. So, I mean, it's not a fair criticism at the very least.
Yeah. And you know what? Even though I've seen some of those reviews of people who are like, oh, it's boring. Oh, it's bleak. Oh, nothing happens in it. Thankfully, there's a lot of open-minded people who are watching this movie, because it's actually trended really, really well on Netflix's metrics this week. I think it peaked at, like, number 3 in the entirety of the U.S. at one point. So that's very promising. I think that speaks well to the Oscar campaign they're going to launch with this film, because this is definitely going to be their front runner for, like, Best Picture, Best Director, that stuff. And I would say it definitely deserves merit for that, and for the script, and for the lead actors, for sure.
I think Campion stands a really good chance of knocking out the director.
Yeah, it would be wholly deserved, absolutely. So, yeah, why don't we wind down the final thoughts? Marco, you've been fairly quiet. Let's pass the ball to you there.
Well, you guys are really excited about this, and I am pretty close to actually being one of those guys that it's like nothing happened. I mean, it's not exactly that nothing happened. It's just, it's so, like, I don't know. I think Bo had a really good comparison at the beginning where it's like, this is kind of like reading a novel. Like, it's, everything is in the subtext and the scenery and the metaphors. It's not a lot happening on screen for you. But that being said, yeah, I can do that. It's great for me, but it's just on the tail end of the other Western that is the exact opposite Tarantino blah, blah, blah kind of Western that Netflix made. I forgot what it was called.
The Harder They Fall?
The Harder They Fall.
Yes, yes. That's
right. Not the Jimmy Cliff picture.
But yeah, there's nothing I didn't like about it. It's just, it was one of those things where it's like, oh, this is what I signed up for. It wasn't the other thing, so it's cool. 4 out of 5 castrated cattle.
Whew. Yeah, I am not a country boy, even though I live in Idaho, funny enough. If you want action, that's probably the most intense moment you'll see in this whole film, because you see every bit of it.
I really enjoyed this. I've been seeing my share of art movies, as I try to do over the years. I've been going to Austin Film Society and theater and seeing some classics. And this movie kind of strikes me as something that might be shown, you know, 10, 20 years from now as a really great example of Campion's powers, because I really do feel, you know, the words that I've used, it's elegant, it's literary, just incredibly well filmed. And yeah, it's just like every now and then you get that movie that is like, ah, this is the filmmaker at the height of their powers. They've assembled an incredible cast that is going to carry her vision along. I was very grateful to have something like this to chew on. I've seen some really good genre movies this year. It's kind of nice to go to the other end of the spectrum and see something like this that has some delicacy and lets me appreciate just that other end of filmmaking. And yeah, I think this is going to garner a lot of critical aplomb, and it's certainly going to rack up some Oscar noms for sure. I really enjoyed it, and I'm still actually thinking about it. So I'm going to give this a 9.5 paper flowers that someone has set ablaze.
And then lit their cigar on. Yeah. No, I'm pretty much in line with you, Bo. I really, really dug this a lot. And, you know, that's one of those things where I signed up for it, seeing that it was Jane Campion, and then hearing the just massive praise it was getting out of TIFF, especially. And it's interesting to see how Jane Campion adapted this movie, because it's based on a book by Thomas Savage that came out in the 60s, and it seems that the way she approached it is similar to how the Coen brothers adapted No Country for Old Men, not in terms of the action, but trimming down a lot of the dialogue and the more overt elements to make it very, like we said, very subtle, very nuanced, very ambiguous. Like, there's some things that happen at the end where it's just not explained to you what happened. You have to sit and think, so I see what happened, but why did it happen? And is that the right choice kind of thing? And I think that's the brilliance of this movie, is that it just makes you chew on it long after you finish it. So it's a shame that I had to watch it on Netflix. I mean, I don't have money to go to the theaters right now. I think this would be a great theatrical experience if you're a person who goes to an indie theater and wants to savor this kind of experience. It's great acting, it's great filmmaking, it's brilliant writing and directing. I honestly, again, I can't think of anything I didn't enjoy watching this movie. It may not be the 10 out of 10 where it just went, oh my gosh, it's the most amazing thing I saw this year, but I would say it's arguably in my top three right now for things I've seen so far. So I'm going to give this 9.5 out of 10 very menacing banjo play.
I think if you do have like a 4K enabled TV and you've got some built-in Netflix, that is the way to do it. The quality was very, very good for me. So I was found it very beautiful and arresting, even on a smaller screen than a big screen.
Yep, and then you can see the glory of Benedict Cumberbatch's little dick in 4K quality.
Hey, he doesn't have a little dick. All you see is some neck. You don't know where that ends. There's no full-on cock in this. There's a lot of neck. This
oh, so that's what necking is. Okay.
I think in the future that's going to be like, you know, girls show off their breasts sometimes, and, you know, maybe 2025, guys are going to be showing a little neck. Come on, guys.